As we all know, high-level talks between the United States and Iran is happening in Switzerland. The first discussion under the US-Iran Memorandum of Understanding held on 22nd June for 18 minutes, with Vice President J.D. Vance leading the US side and Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagheer Ghalibaf leading the Iranian side. And then two notorious countries, Qatar and Pakistan, were also present as mediators. Now, what were the key outcomes of this meeting? Number one, 60-day roadmap. US and Iran established a roadmap for reaching a final deal within 60 days, laying the foundation for further negotiations. Point number two, high-level committee. A high-level committee with political oversight of mediation was created, and working groups formed by the negotiators are to begin work immediately. Point number three, Strait of Hormuz communication line. A contact channel was set up to avoid incidents and miscommunication over the Strait of Hormuz. Point number four, Lebanon deconfliction cell. A deconfliction cell between the parties and Lebanon was agreed upon to prevent fighting from happening again. Point number five, economic concessions. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi stated that oil and petrochemical exports were waived, the blockade was lifted, some frozen assets were released, and a major reconstruction and development plan was launched for Iran. So these are some of the key outcomes from first meeting. Now, even when talks were going on, Trump posted this on Truth Social. We will hit Iran very hard again, just like we did last week, only harder. Unless it stops its highly paid proxies in Lebanon. Now, Trump also had warned Iranian officials, you close it, he is referring to the Strait of Hormuz, and you won't have a country. If the US president is making these kind of threats, while his own colleagues are simultaneously negotiating with Iran, you can imagine how badly Washington wants a deal, or at least wants Iran to accept American terms. And these are not empty threats. This is a power politics in action, mixed with a certain degree of frustration and anger. On one hand, the US is talking peace. On the other, it is reminding Iran of the consequences of saying no. On the other side, the Iranian delegation has said to the American side that any form of threat is considered a serious violation of the agreement. Iran's chief negotiator Ghalibaf warned that Iranian armed forces were ready to respond in many ways. There are some reports saying that the Iranian team had walked out of the meeting, but Vice President J.D. Vance denied this on Monday, saying no, they did not throw a wrench in the system. In my last video, I have mentioned why Iran was not in a complete good mood to negotiate with the United States. Because last week, Israel launched fresh attacks on Lebanon. That became the central issue for Iran. Fighting in southern Lebanon between Iranian-backed Hezbollah and Israel had continued even as the Switzerland talks progressed. And then, as we know, Iran has once again closed the Strait of Hormuz, alleging ceasefire violation by Israel. Although the United States military denied Iran's claim to control the strait, all this has been covered in the last video. Now let's analyze the tone of the American side after the first level of Switzerland talks. J.D. Vance called it a successful foundation, while Qatar and Pakistan also described this session as positive and constructive. Now, J.D. Vance said, Trump had asked us to turn over a new leaf to transform our relationship with the people of Iran. Technical talks were set to continue through the rest of the week. But the question is, did Iran really walk out? Yes, there was a walkout. But it was partial and temporary, not a full collapse. Iran's delegation walked out in direct response to Trump's threats on Sunday to attack Iran over its support for Hezbollah. Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif was shocked at the walkout and sent the country's Interior Minister Mohsin Naqvi with the Iranian team while he discussed the matter with Pakistan's Army Chief Asim Munir. However, it wasn't a complete breakdown. Neither the United States nor Iranian officials have publicly confirmed a walkout, but there is a drift between the two. The first round of talks went for roughly 80 minutes. What we saw interesting was that, after round one of the talks, the Iranian delegation refused to take part in a planned handshake and joint photo opportunity with American officials. That incident is enough to say that the American side was snubbed. So the honest summary is that Iran walked out of the photo op and briefly left the room, but mediators pulled them back and talks eventually concluded with an agreed roadmap. Now the important question is, why did Trump say hit Iran very hard again, just like we did last week? Now, in this month of June, the war escalated. If you remember, the United States forces launched strikes against Iran in response to a US Army Apache helicopter that was shot down by Iran. The US Central Command has said strikes hit Iranian military surveillance capabilities, communication systems, and air defense sites. When Trump said, hit Iran very hard again, just like we did last week, by last week he refers to the strikes of June 10th and 11th. Trump on June 10th has said, we will hit very hard tonight. threatening to assume total control of Iran's oil and gas industries, including the important Kharg Island. The American attack were intense and wider, with explosions from strikes echoing till Iran's capital, as well as the port city of Bandar Abbas and areas along the Strait of Hormuz. So when Trump said, just like we did last week, only harder, during the Switzerland talks, he was threatening to resume the same kind of intense military strikes that happened around June 10th and 11th. It is a pressure tactic to warn Iran not to close the Strait of Hormuz again, or not to continue supporting Hezbollah in Lebanon. Now the next question is why the United States actually wants Hormuz open. Now for this you have to understand that the United States is not just an oil seller, it's the anchor of the global economy. Let me tell you in points to make you understand better. Point number 1. You heard of the petrodollar system, right? The US dollar is the world's reserve currency, largely because global oil trade is priced in dollars. When oil markets are disrupted and the global economy destabilizes, it actually undermines dollar dominance and the US financial power. A chaotic oil market isn't the same as a profitable one for the United States. Remember this point. Now point number 2. This is the main reason. If Strait of Hormuz stays closed, US allies get hurt far more than the US itself. About 20% of the world's oil passes through Hormuz, but the biggest buyers of that oil are Japan, South Korea, India and China, not the United States. The United States itself sources most of its oil domestically from Canada, Mexico. So Hormuz closure means it is going to devastate US allies in Asia. It will spike global inflation. It will very well cause recession in Europe and Asia. And all of this will create massive diplomatic pressure on Washington to fix it. Now point number 3. If Hormuz stays closed, even the United States consumer will feel the pain too. Even though the United States doesn't import much Gulf oil directly, oil is a global priced commodity. When Hormuz closes, oil spikes to $120 to $150 per barrel globally, and Americans pay more at the gas pump, for food, for everything. That's a direct political problem for Trump domestically. There is a saying, right? When you try to create something big, you automatically are part of it. Any disruption will personally hurt you as well, not just your stakeholders. Point number 4. The US military is already deployed in the Middle East or West Asia. The United States Navy is actively escorting ships through the Strait of Hormuz. Keeping it closed means an ongoing, expensive, risky military commitment with no clear end. And then there is also a huge risk. What if the Iranian attack US naval assets? That will increase expenditure for the US government. And the last reason, number 5, is American oil companies are not that simple either. If you look at the US shale producers, yes, they do benefit from high prices for short term, but extreme price hikes and geopolitical chaos creates investment uncertainty, supply chain disruptions, and eventually demand destruction. None of which is great for the long-term US energy industry. So these are some important reasons why the United States actually wants Hormuz open. And that is why we see a certain degree of frustration and anger in Trump while they are coming up with a deal with Iran. Now you might be noticing a contradiction here. If the United States has so many strategic reasons to keep the Strait of Hormuz open, if it is desperately trying to secure a deal with Iran, and if Trump's frustration during negotiations is so visible, then the obvious question is, why pick a fight with Iran in the first place? Why go through months of escalation and cause so much damage under Operation Epic Fury? So the real answer behind that is, Trump, or you can say the US government, it is against their interest if Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz, or for that matter, anyone. That is the reason United States and Israel's primary goal is to destroy or limit Iran's nuclear capability. Because in this entire Gulf region, no other rich Muslim country has nuclear capability. Iran has it, and that is a problem for United States and Israel, and also for other Gulf allies. A nuclear capable Iran will significantly alter the regional balance of power, and it will give Iran much greater influence to shape regional dynamics on its own terms. And if you see, Operation Epic Fury started because of this only. But Iran played it really well and pulled in the importance of Hormuz and tied it to its own survival, to the stability of the global economy. It's like, if I go down, I shall take everyone with me. Iran knows this. More than nuclear power, controlling Hormuz will give them geopolitical power, revenue and a chokehold over US allies. And this is what Trump hates. And he wants the United States to be the one controlling axis, not Iran. In short, the goal is not to open Hormuz for free. Open Strait of Hormuz on American terms, which is very different from an open Hormuz on Iranian terms. I hope you are getting what I'm trying to say. Now, if you see the United States allies, they are feeling the pressure that is real and significant. Because look at Japan and South Korea. They are economically strangled. These two US treaty allies are almost entirely dependent on Gulf oil. The Hormuz closure hits them immediately and severely. Energy is low, industrial slowdown, currency pressure. Both governments have been quietly but urgently pressing Washington to end the war fast. They can't afford to be publicly critical of the United States, but the pressure behind closed doors is intense. Then look at India, the awkward middle power. India imports roughly 40-45% of its oil from the Gulf. This war puts India in an extremely uncomfortable position. It has deep ties with both the United States and Iran and Russia. Modi government has been pushing hard for a negotiated settlement, partly through back channels. The fact that Pakistan and Qatar are the mediators is partly a reflection of India not wanting to be seen taking sides openly. Then look at Europe. They are facing inflation and political fallout. European economies were already fragile. Oil above $120 per barrel has reignited inflation, just as central banks thought they had it under control. But then several European governments are facing elections. They cannot afford the political cost. Look at Spain. They famously refused to let the United States use their air bases during Operation Epic Fury. Now that is a remarkable act of defiance from a NATO ally, and Trump threatened to cut trade with them over it. Then look at China. It is a quiet but powerful pressure. This is the most geopolitically interesting one. China is the single largest buyer of Gulf oil. The Hormuz closure hits China hard economically. But China also doesn't want the United States to emerge from this war as the unchallenged military controller of the world's most critical oil choke point. So China has been pressuring both sides, Iran to negotiate and the US to not overreach in its quite own way. Now what this means for Trump's calculation is this. Trump is genuinely caught between two instincts. Instinct number one, maximum pressure. Hit Iran hard, extract maximum concessions, establish US dominance over the Strait of Hormuz, come out looking like the strongest president in history. Then instinct number two, deal making. Close the deal fast, declare victory, take credit for ending the war, and let oil prices fall so that the US economy looks good heading into the next political cycle. The Allied pressure is essentially forcing Trump to pick instinct number two. Every week the war continues, US allies are suffering, calling Washington, threatening to deepen ties with China as an alternative security guarantor, and creating diplomatic headaches that chip away at American soft power. Now look at the deeper strategic reality. There is a saying in geopolitics, the hegemon pays the cost of order. The US has built its global dominance partly on being the guarantor of free navigation and open trade. The moment it allows a regional power to permanently close a major choke point, it signals weakness to every other challenger. China in the South China Sea, Russia in the Baltic. So ironically, the United States cannot afford to win too slowly or too messily. Because the longer the disorder continues, the more it erodes the very system of American-led global order that makes the United States powerful in the first place. That's the real pressure Trump is under, not just from allies calling him on the phone, but from the structural logic of what it means to be the world's leading power. I hope you found this video informative. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you in the next one.